Welcome to the Information Technology Podcast, sponsored by Do IT Smarter. Knowledge, tools, build, grow. Don't just do IT, do IT smarter.
I'd like to welcome everyone to the Information Technology Podcast, and today I am interviewing Paul Burns with ReadyTech, and Paul brings an interesting perspective to IT. And here's my interview with Paul Burns.
You are the owner and CEO of ReadyTech, is that right?
I'm the CEO and president slash owner, okay. Yeah. I'm the chief cook and bottle washer.
Okay. And then how did you get started in IT, or how did you get your start?
Well, it's kind of interesting because, you know, my education was finance. And so I came, and my graduate work was also in finance. And you know, I came up to the ranks of finance, audit, and control, and was a controller for several Fortune 500 companies. And back in the day, and actually I think it's still the case, frequently the CFO controller will also manage the IT functions along with the financial and accounting functions. And so because of that, I had the unique privilege of working with the IT people. And the thing I realized in that position was how necessary they were to my success as a financial controller. You know, having good systems, having good databases, having good information was everything I needed to be successful. So I came to spend a lot of time with those guys. And that tactic or that approach I did made me much more successful as a controller and got me promoted to a CFO, because you have these high-performing organizations that produce good results. But that's how I started working in the IT area. It was all working with managing the IT people, understanding the issues, and starting to make management calls. So that's kind of all my experience in IT is all on the job. And it's been a lot of fun because you really see firsthand what the issues are and what needs to be done.
Now, in your experience, what percentage of the total expense for, you know, the type of companies you are working with, what is the total expense for IT?
For IT?
Yeah.
I would say you're looking there in a neighborhood of, I would say a typical number is between 1% and 2% of revenue is pretty solid. And obviously that's going to flex up and down depending on projects, depending on relative size of the company, things of that nature. But as an ongoing spend rate for an in-house IT function, I would say you're looking at making that kind of investment annually.
And then, Paul, were you kind of a techie when you got involved? I mean, before you got involved with your own company, are you somewhat interested in technology and things along that nature?
Actually, I'd have to say no. It's really interesting. It's one of those, the genius for my business, I got so frustrated trying to solve these problems that I'd spend hours on the phone with support people, spend money for help, and I'd spend hours, money, and time, and end up exactly where I was, just out the money and the time. And I said, this is nuts. You know, small businesses, individuals need that kind of help, and they just couldn't get it. And so that really gave me some impetus to think about a support organization for that small and medium-sized business that really needs the help and frankly can't get it.
And then what is your business kind of focused on in terms of helping small to medium-sized businesses in their IT support?
Oh, well, the epiphany I went through there, I mean, like everybody else, I assume break fix was the model. And, you know, and I had a major prejudice against help desks. I just hated them. And I just thought they were awful and the service was bad. And it didn't matter what your problem was. The first question out of their mouths was, is the computer turned on? Is it plugged in? And this is really annoying. And so consequently, I'll be the biggest, you know, I've been a Do IT partner for over 2 years, 2.5 years nearly, and that first year and a half, I frankly struggled with the help desk concept just because of my own prejudice. And I finally, call me stupid, but it took me that long to figure out that this was away, you know, the help desk, rather than being a forgotten component, should be a key component in what I'm doing. And the revelation was that I can provide better service for my clients, win more clients, and do it with less infrastructure. And oh, by the way, the other fallout of that is that you go from, you know, where a recurring revenue portion might be a third of what you're billing is for a client, it basically becomes all of it. And all those things, it just resonated with me, and I realized, and that was the epiphany I went through about 1 year ago. And since I've gone through that change, my recurring revenues have quadrupled, and it's been wonderful. And now when someone calls, you know, or when I meet with people, when we're looking at new prospects, new opportunities, if they're looking at break fix, I'm not interested. You know, it's the kind of thing, I don't want that kind of business. I don't want to do it. So I think that answers your question. Did it, Tony, or did I miss?
No, yeah, that absolutely does. And I kind of want to get into a little bit of that methodology because, I mean, I'll be frank. I talk to a lot of business owners, and they're in a similar situation where they don't want to let go of control of their business. And they feel by outsourcing either their help desk or outsourcing any type of NOC service that somehow they're losing transparency. Has that been your experience?
I don't think it's so much an issue with the business owners worried about the outsourcer's partner. I think it's more if your transparent point, I like, it's important. I think they want their partner to be transparent and really lay out for them what they're going to do, how they're going to do it, and be straight up guys that they can trust. Because really what you're talking about with an outsourced relationship like this is that you're becoming a trusted advisor to them. And, you know, you've got to put that best foot forward all the time to become that trusted advisor. And I think a very essential component of that is talking to the process of engagement, using the best practice assessment. All these things build credibility, show your expertise, and frankly, make you look transparent to that client. And the more you can look like you're there to help them, that you're trying to do the right things for them, they will love you for that. And that will tend to any kind of paranoia a client or a prospect may have about that kind of outsourcing thing will tend to diminish. And the other nice thing going on in the marketplace is that there are other providers out there that are building awareness for this model. So it's the kind of thing that it's not like you're teaching the pig to sing. You know, people are starting to get it because there's some impetus out there to train or to educate and build awareness/demand generation for this type of service.
So would you say that your typical client right now is more aware of managed services and that they're actually asking for these types of services?
Yes, and I don't want to overstate that. It's not like everyone's asking for it, but it's the kind of thing that I would say over the last 6 months, for example, I would venture to say that 20% are understand the model and maybe not asking for it, but they get it and they're there very quickly or even asking for it. And 80% let's say 50 or 60% are with a little education get there. And you're going to have that hardcore 15 or 20, 30% that are just not interested. And my advice to any of your partners or prospects, on that 20 or 30%, spend an hour or so educating. If they haven't come around in that hour, drop it. Don't worry about it because you're going to spend lots of time, lots of energy, and get nowhere. You've got to give them one or two good opportunities to understand. If they don't get it, they're probably not going to. And some of that is a function of size of the organization. Some of that is just a mindset. So that would be my words of wisdom there.
And that's really good advice because I think at the end of the day, you have to be strategic in, you know, to be a really effective business owner, you got to be strategic in those relationships you create because ultimately you don't want necessarily to be a concierge of your business. you want to set a standard that people are comfortable engaging with you. And a lot of people go the concierge approach, and they just compete over price, and they price themselves right out of business.
Oh, and that's exactly right. And actually, another, and that's a really great point, Tony. You know, frequently you'll get the call, well, gee, what are your rates? And I diffuse that answer immediately. I said, I really don't want to talk about rates. I don't know anything about what you do or how you function or anything. I said, what we really need to do is schedule a best practice assessment, and then you explain what that is and what you're going to do, what you're going to provide, and that it's no charge. And basically, I'd say 75% of the time or more, that diffuses that question. And the thing you want to do, that you must do, if you answer that question, well, my rates are $125 an hour, they don't even know you yet, and you've got a price tag stuck to your forehead. You don't want that. It's like death. What you want to do is get the opportunity to establish your expertise, your credibility, your value that you can provide them, and then price becomes secondary. I mean, it's not to say that it's off the table, but by the same token, you have a chance to say, you know, this is the type of organization you're going to deal with, and you cannot do that over the phone. You cannot do that with a rate per hour, and I think that's another key learning that you know, partners need to provide to their clients, and you need to do the same exercise with your employees. That's a major change because, you know, a lot of your techs are thinking break fix. So you've got to educate them on what this means.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And you know, back to your point about when the customer calls, you know, really they're just not educated about IT. You know, they don't know the difference between, you know, hosted, exchange, monitoring, right. And they don't want to look dumb either. And that's the thing that I found is they just divert back to what they know, and they know price, and you know, they're usually sent out by the CEO or by, you know, somebody in upper management to kind of do some fact gathering. And really that's the only thing they can kind of compare is price. And so I think that's a great way to diffuse things and really begin to build value, and even to tell them, you know, hey, look, in most cases I am not the lowest price, but here's where I'm different. Here's where I'm going to provide you with a superior experience.
And I'll be honest, Tony, I don't even lead with my chin in that respect. I don't even go there. Don't even talk about I'm not the lowest price. Let me come out and just demonstrate our capability. And I don't even say that. I said, let's do a best practice assessment. From that, we can, from a tops-down basis, understand where you're at and do a gap analysis and say, here's what we see, here's some holes that we see need to, and prepare a written report and do that for free. That's cool. People like that. They have something tangible. They have a plan. You know, that's compelling. That's very compelling. And I would advise clients or prospects and our partners not to even say, I'm not the lowest price. Don't even go there. Just diffuse it all together and just talk about what you're going to do and take price as much as you can off the table.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. So talk to me a little bit about, you know, when you brought on managed services, what percentage of your total solution is monitoring right now?
I talk about it more of as a solution than a monitored piece. And the solution really is keeping your business up, keeping it managed, having fixed cost IT, having service level agreements. You know, those are compelling arguments that are frankly not heard frequently in this industry space. And then I talk about what are the components of that program. And the components I speak to are live attendant help desk, scheduled maintenance, 7x24 reporting monitoring of your system with remote remediation. And I talk about, you know, first you talk about the benefit, you know, what's that client or prospect going to win, and then you talk about the features. And the feature set would be all those tools, that tripod, that support the program. And so I wouldn't really answer the question with, well, what percent is monitoring? It's part of that tripod. And you really need all three legs of the tripod for the program to really be successful, to get the best win for the client, to get the best win for you as a partner. And I think that's not a trivial point. I think it's very important that you look at all these legs as being absolutely critical to the program.
Well, I think that sometimes the challenge that we have intellectually is people don't understand how monitoring impacts your incident management component. Your incident management component is going to impact your help desk. Your help desk really needs to be managed by writing an effective SLA. And so as soon as you bring on managed services, there's like this, there's all these other pieces and parts of the business model that are impacted. And so, you know, I think some people in this industry, if they've been successful in break fix, they can immediately retreat back to that because they don't really understand how that impact's going to be. So I don't know if that's.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think it's one that you have to, I think, for lack of a better term, do some introspective looking at how you want to provide service to your clients and what your service level is going to be. And to me, you know, the issue, the introspection or the thought I'd offer for the guy, the hardcore break fix guys, is think about all the projects that never get done because the call doesn't come. You know, think about going from, well, here's all the reactions that we, all the fires we put out, but we never did anything about the proactive projects to make their system better, to document it better, to make it work better. If you want the satisfaction with your clients to really work on those things, then I think it's important that you go through that metamorphosis and really shift from that break fix slash plumber guy to their business partner, their slash CIO slash whatever, to help them see what they need to see and help them make the right calls so that they're looking past, you know, it's like a driver looking at the end of his at the end of his hood. You want to raise that vision up and have them looking a little bit longer out, and so they can make better investments and help their business work better. Because if you do those kinds of things, start looking out a little more, you become, I think, more essential into their solving their business problems, which is, I think, where you have to go. And I think that would be an important thought process. You know, have that, if you are a break-fix person, think about all the clients that are things you'd like to do and you never get done. And then you could then use this tripod model to start thinking about, okay, here's areas that we need to go after, here are tasks that we need to do. And I think your client will enjoy it more. I think your techs will enjoy it more. And it will be a much more mutually rewarding experience on both sides.
And that, Paul, that's a really good point, because at the end of the day, you're really about providing a better service, which ultimately helps their organization run better. And by their organization running better, they're making more money. They have less downtime. And so I think, you know, if you can present, I think my experience has been talking with partners is that's really where they've done a good job in communicating to their end user that that's the value they're really creating for them. And then when that end user buys into it, they really are creating that win-win-win situation.
Yes, and it's one of those things, you're going to smile with the work you do, and you're going to smile at your bank account. And that's nirvana. You know, if you can have fun doing what you're doing, and, oh, by the way, make more money while you're doing it, it doesn't get any better than that. I mean, I can't think of anything better than that. You know, I'm a bean canner, so.
If yeah.
You can have fun and make more money, man, that's it.
Paul, talk to me just briefly about your experience working with Don specifically and getting trained on how to do managed services. Do you feel that it was something that you could have maybe learned on your own, or do you feel that you kind of needed that external mentor relationship to kind of get a better handle on managed services?
I would say that for all prospects and partners out there, I think the training with Don is invaluable, because he will help you understand the concept. And Don uses the term packaging, and you know, I sometimes use the term productize. You know, I came out of electronics and technology as a bean counter, but you know, I worked with marketing people and productizing, you know, turning services, thoughts, ideas, performance, turning that into a product that you can put a name on and then start to inform customers or prospects about is really important. It's probably job one. And, you know, Don is really going to be invaluable helping those new partners really grasp that concept and, you know, follow along, you know, help do that work. And I'm sure Don helps them start to identify their core differentiators so they can really separate themselves from the crowd. That's an important exercise. You know, all these things are important to help that new partner go from not having a clue of what these things mean to integrating that into their branding, their identification, and how they go out to the market with their service offering. And that's going to be a very critical part in the success of building their business through marketing, through brand awareness, through all those kinds of exercises. And I would encourage those new prospects to really do the legwork on that and put the effort and energy into it, and because it's critical. You have to do it. It's not something that's an option. You must do it, because break fix is dead. You know, the quicker the potential partners realize that, the more successful they will be.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was just actually up in Irvine yesterday at a Microsoft conference, and it was just kind of, yeah, it was just one of the regional ones. But the biggest thing that Microsoft is pushing right now is their Hyper-V and the you know, the hosting of virtualization.
Yep.
Of all their services.
The virtual server. Yep.
And so, I mean, that in and of itself, they estimated that they're going to be selling 1.8 million servers this year, and they're not. You know, these are the quad core design, the top of the line design with the top of the line software. Yep. And so, you know, you're seeing this consolidation of your data center. You're seeing, you know, multiple applications running on one server. You're seeing all this virtualization. And it just really speaks to that, to really be competitive in this industry and to really make, you know, the type of money you're going to want to make, you can't just have the pitch, give me a call when it breaks.
Yeah.
When you go down, just give me a call.
Yeah.
End users are not going to – it's just not going to work for them if their data is critical enough and their business is critical enough that when they go down, they're going to be losing money.
Absolutely.
And so you're just not going to be able to compete. So I agree with your point. So.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. I mean, it's the whole concept. And the other nice thing as a DUIT partner is having that network of other professionals you can tap into. You may have clients with very advanced security needs. Let's say it's SharePoint services, things of that nature. You can tap into that network. And like anything else, you know, having those friends out there that can help you is really important. And the other aspect of that that is also not trivial is being able to, as a small business, cast a nationwide footprint. You know, let's say you've got that client that has a satellite office in San Diego, a headquarters in Denver, and a regional office in Midland, Texas. You know, theoretically, there are DUIT partners in all those areas, so you could be a one-stop shop for that whole organization. Now, isn't that cool? You know, just being able to talk about that separates you from all but the biggest guys. And that's a nice differentiator, that you can offer that kind of footprint, those kinds of services.
Right. And the other thing, too, I mean, there are services like, you know, OnForce, which, you know, people can use for a similar type of relationship. However, the biggest difference is these partners have kind of been through the training. They know the Do IT Smarter mantra, if you will.
Absolutely, and it's all about system and delivery. You know, you have a systematic delivery process, and you have a consistency in delivery. That's I hate to use the word franchise because it's not, but having that consistent delivery method, you know, makes you look and feel like a franchise, even though you're not. And there's safety in that. That they know that whether you're in Midland, Texas, or San Diego, or Denver, you're going to get approximately the same kinds of tools, the same kinds of service, the same kinds, you know, that delivery method is going to be consistent.
Exactly. And here's the thing that I found, too, and I don't know if it's specific to IT, but I think it's somewhat specific to kind of business owners, is what I think some business owners kind of fall into the trap of doing is they're like, oh, okay, I need to do some design work. So then they go out and they would buy, you know, the Adobe design suite, you know, invest the $2,000 in that software, invest another grand into a Macintosh, you know, computer. And then they start doing their own design work. And then at the end of the day, their product is not nearly as good as what they could have used if they would have partnered with someone and got it done or just outsourced that particular piece. And so the trap I think people get into is they're like, well, I really need to know SQL, or I really need to become a SharePoint specialist and become really proficient in that, where really as a business owner, you need to create a demand first and then have the deliverable. And so with Do IT Smarter, we already have professionals in Unix, Linux, Macintosh. You know, I mean, 90% of our partners are obviously Windows-based, but you know, within Windows, there's SharePoint, Exchange, VPN, all these other things that you don't necessarily need to be, you know, proficient in or a specialist in. You just need to know the guy who is the expert.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, particularly now, because for those new partners coming in, think about what's going on in the Microsoft world. You've got this whole revolution with convergence and unified communication. You've got the Office Communication Server, the OCS stack. So you have some very compelling offerings coming out from Microsoft that, frankly, from a training, from a knowledge aspect, is daunting from just an ability to get your staff trained to the training expenses themselves and the infrastructure. So like anything else, if you can leverage your partnerships, your organization to help you through that, that's tremendous. Because think about it, you know, the organizations, you know, these are things that are going to be, and I hate, it's an overused cliche, but disruptive in the whole business of providing, you know, this whole convergence thing, the whole collaboration thing. Those, we cannot ignore those. You know, businesses want that, and the people that can talk to it, can provide service in those areas, are the ones that will win. And it's important that you become part of that wave as opposed to trying to be a salmon swimming against it. You know, you've got to play, and you got to have to know that. So it's good to have friends. It's good to have partners. It's good to have those kinds of things when you're in the